Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham. This is the podcast for Tuesday, November 17th.
I'm a big believer in openness when it comes to the flow of information.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama in China this week. He was answering a question about China's internet restrictions at a carefully orchestrated town hall meeting attended by Chinese young people.
I think that the more freely information flows, the stronger the society becomes.
This is a right that underpins so many others. It's one that's chronically under assault by the Chinese government.
Sophie Richardson is the Asia Advocacy Director for Human Rights Watch. She says she's glad that President Obama mentioned the freedom of expression, but she wishes he'd go further.
Between the rule of law and the freedom of expression, those are the issues that we think matter the most, not just sort of in pure human rights terms, but matter enormously to successfully ensuring a host of other American interests in this bilateral relationship.
In a recent Wall Street Journal op-ed, Richardson wrote that President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton are behaving as if the United States has no power in its relationship with China.
From our perspective, the administration did not get off to a great start when, less than a month after the administration had come into office, Secretary Clinton said that human rights, quote, shouldn't interfere with other issues in the bilateral relationship. And then on arrival in Beijing, she literally said publicly that the U.S. really needed the Chinese government to keep buying U.S. Treasury bonds. And the Chinese government has interpreted that message, which really hasn't been walked back or altered in any way since that time, as the U.S. is in such dire economic straits that it is not going to do anything to irritate the Chinese government.
I have a question about that.
Sure.
I mean, are we in such... when you say, the United States has behaved as if it has no power in a bilateral
right.
relationship. I mean, has the economic landscape actually changed things so much that the U.S. has, you know, significantly less power or less leverage than it's had before, or even no power in this relationship? Is that true?
This situation is at least one of mutually assured deterrence, right? It's not like the Chinese government has someplace else to put its money. And so, you know, it's as invested in making sure that the U.S. survives economically as the U.S. is. This is not, it's not simply the case that all of the power has shifted from Washington to Beijing. You know, that's not inconsistent with also pushing hard on human rights, and human rights in China in particular, which certainly candidate Clinton and candidate Obama were quite tough about.
Richardson says that China has taken several steps back on human rights issues in the past year.
Well, one of the single most negative developments to take place since President Obama came into office, and this is not as a result of his coming into office, it's just the timing happens to be coincidental, were the July 2009 protests in Urumqi, which is the capital of Xinjiang, the westernmost province in China that's populated primarily by Muslims, and where the Chinese government has really systematically conflated the local population's linguistic and religious and cultural differences, or their expressions of those differences, as forms of terrorism or separatism. There were protests in early July that really got out of hand and saw some pretty gruesome violence committed by Uyghurs against Han and then some retaliatory attacks. And in the wake of those attacks, we documented several dozen enforced disappearances, meaning disappearances by members of the security forces, of Uyghur men and boys. And it's a real concern to us, particularly, you know, as the Obama administration seeks to portray itself as a friend of sort of the moderate Muslim world, that it hasn't even really spoken out, except in response to specific press questions, about attacks on this particular community.
So that's attacks on a specific ethnic group. And then there's also a report that you've just released about so-called black jails. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, these are essentially off-the-books secret detention facilities. And the ones that we've looked at were primarily in Beijing. And they're actually run by officials from other provinces who are trying to keep people from their provinces from going to Beijing to make use of a system in China that dates back to imperial times and sort of sits alongside the formal legal system that allows people to bring complaints they haven't gotten answered at the local level up to the national level. but there are now incentives in place for local officials to keep those people from going to Beijing and raising their grievances. And the local officials' answer to this problem has been to essentially establish these illegal detention facilities to incarcerate these people to keep them out of sight. You know, and these are, you know, circumstances in which all sorts of abuses can and do take place. The detention of minors, rapes, gross physical abuse, psychological abuse, you know, threats that if people continue their petitioning activities after they leave, they or their family members will be harmed. They're essentially being penalized for trying to exercise their legal rights. And this, to us, is another example between, you know, of the gap between the Chinese government's rhetoric on adhering to the rule of law and the reality on the ground.
But that is so much of what we hear, that China is making strides when it comes to the rule of law, that it has opened up some press freedoms. What do you see as the difference between the rhetoric and the reality?
Well, the gaps are not insignificant. You know, this is a government that, you know, has undertaken at least some cosmetic reforms. For example, it wrote into the Constitution in 2004 that it's the state's responsibility to protect and promote human rights. It's now gone off and participated in its first round of universal periodic review before the UN's Human Rights Commission. The Chinese government loves to get up and talk in public about its adherence to the rule of law. But the reality is that access to justice for the vast majority of ordinary Chinese citizens is an extremely elusive goal. I mean, it is a chronic problem, for example, that local courts simply will not accept cases against local officials, right? And that's, you know, sort of the vast majority of the kinds of complaints that come to the courts. And part of the point that we try to make back to the Chinese government is to say, listen, you either have to let people get their grievances resolved in a court, you know, according to a set of predictable and equally applied laws, or people are going to take these grievances out onto the street.
So how does the crackdown or the restrictions that you're talking about, how do they affect trade relationships?
Well, look, I mean, just to give you one example, we all know that the Chinese press is heavily censored. And you may recall that last year there was an enormous global scandal about tainted milk powder formula coming out of China. The Chinese domestic press was ready to report that story in June of 2008, but they were not allowed to do so, partly because it was just 2 months out from the Olympics and the government wanted everything to look and sound great. So the story doesn't actually break and get run internationally until September, 3 months later, by which point, you know, thousands of kids have gotten sick, not just in China, but elsewhere too. Some of them have died. You know, that problem alone prompted the FDA to issue an alert about importing processed foods from China. I think it really underscores the connection between things like the importance of a free press and product safety in a world of incredibly globalized trade. My ability to keep lead-painted toys out of my kids' room here in Washington is in part dependent on whether a Chinese journalist can quickly report a story about a factory he's found painting toys with lead, you know, that are for export. There's a very clear relationship between some of these issues.
That was Sophie Richardson. And that's Rights Watch for this week. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about us, including audio, video, and multimedia features, please visit hrw.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.